The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Exciting news! October sees the launch of the world's first live healthy breakfast show right here on UK Health Radio. Presented by the amazing Dr. Shan Hussein every weekday from 7 till 9 a.m. Also live streamed via YouTube and available on UK Health Radio's Listen on Demand for our global audience. Start your day the healthy way.
Show about integrative medicine and cancer. I'm the show host, Robin Daly, and I'm the founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that supports people with cancer in understanding and accessing integrative medicine. This week, I've travelled to Holland, and not having any great awareness of the state of development of integrative oncology here, I've contacted Dr. Vera Novotny, who is on the board of the Academy for Integrative Medicine and an oncology and haematology specialist. Dr. Novotny kindly invited me to visit her at her home near the German border. Hi Vera, thanks very much for making the time for this interview.
You're welcome.
My aim today is to find out a bit more about cancer care generally in Holland, how things stand, how things are progressing, and in particular, how integrative oncology is progressing, of course. So, looked at from our side of the channel, in England we're famed for our stiff upper lips and generally being a bit uptight. To us, Holland appears all very forward-thinking, open-minded, relaxed, and cannabis-friendly. Does my stereotypical description bear any relation to reality when it comes to healthcare, and particularly as to how cancer is treated?
Well, I think that if you look at the treatment of cancer patients in the Netherlands, it's still a bit conservative. So we use the conventional therapies. But if I look at the developments in several hospitals, there's a tendency to use lifestyle a bit more in the support of patients with cancer. And very well known in that respect is Ann Spekkens. She's a principal lecturer in psychiatry. And she promoted mindfulness as an additional support for patients with cancer. And there are a lot of publications at the moment that it makes a difference in relaxation, stress reduction. And also is very beneficial if you look at the influence on the immune system. So it's very interesting to see that happen and to see it more and more incorporated in supportive care of in oncology.
So change is happening, but it's still got a long way to go.
Right, okay, all right, so
before we dig into the topic of integration in Holland, could I ask a bit about yourself first? First of all, your name doesn't sound so Dutch to me. So would you just say a bit about your background and about your training?
Yeah, I'm a half Czech. And I was trained in medicine in the Free University Hospital in Amsterdam. Later, I was trained as an internist and hematologist. And I'm also an immunologist. And from the beginning of my study, I was interested in cancer treatment and interested in how lifestyle can influence this cancer. And I always looked at cancer as the question I had was, is it a disease of an organ or is it a disease of the system expressing itself in an organ? And if it's a disease of the system, then maybe the system can additionally be supported by lifestyle interventions. And that is also a question many of my people ask, because I also treat cancer of the hematopoietic system. They ask me, doctor, what can I do myself to support myself in this respect? And Yeah, because of that interest, I also studied functional medicine, lifestyle mm-hmm. intervention, and I try to incorporate that in the treatment of my patients. And I try to, if there's a lot of stress, I try to promote them to do something on stress reduction, and I refer my patients to people who are specialized in that. Mm. And we have a few websites in the Netherlands on cancer treatment, but also on lifestyle and cancer. And one of the most important websites at the moment, I think, is that of the World Cancer Research Foundation, mm-hmm. which had a very good publication last year with a lot of lifestyle interventions, just in prevention, but also in intervention. And there are a lot of publications on what beneficial effects can be of vitamin C, for instance, in the food or as a supplement, but also vitamin D is very important in the treatment of cancer. And I think that's something not widely used yet, mm-hmm. but there are in hematological cancers like chronic lymphatic leukemia and Hodgkin's disease, already publication that if you have a low vitamin D level, that you have a much bigger chance to progress and to enter the state of indication for treatment. Mm. So I think it's very important to look at lifestyle intervention in the case of prevention, but also intervention, and to promote that more in the treatment of patients.
Yeah, interesting. But that kind of lifelong interest you're describing there, it's quite unusual in your field, though, it sounds like, in Holland, but it's becoming more acceptable. All right, interesting. So I contacted you via the Academy for Integrative Medicine, AIM, which you're a board member of?
Yeah.
I don't know much about it. It's a professional organization, presumably.
It is a professional organization. Yeah. Frans Kussen has done a lot to develop this organization as an educational organization, where people with interest in integrative medicine can be trained, because we don't have at the universities in the curriculum anything about integrative medicine or lifestyle intervention. So that's how it started, and a lot of lecturers from universities were invited as lecturers, as a lecturer to do their part in the training. Mm-hmm. So it was the first year, and now they are developing two other years with more specialization, so that you don't have the general things like what is mindfulness, what is lifestyle intervention, but what is stress reduction, but also things like going more into the depth of supplements, the use of supplements, the use of music therapy as it influenced the adrenal gland and reduces stress. So the program is developing, and I think that one of the aims is to get connected with university hospitals to do a training for doctors. Lifestyle intervention and nutrition is not well lighted within the education and within the training of medical doctors. Mm. And since there are a lot of publications and a lot of good research, you can, in my opinion, develop it as an evidence-based supportive oncology.
Right.
It's very basic, with your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Doing those things because they are evidence-based.
Yeah. Sure. So there are plans at the AIM to actually have some specialist oncology teaching, is that right?
Yeah.
The program for. Excellent. Okay. That's good to hear. One more question about the AIM. Is it just for doctors or is it for a range of practitioners?
No, it's just for doctors at the moment.
Right.
There are a lot of programs for therapists. And at the high school, Arnhem Nijmegen High School in Nijmegen, there's a program for nurses.
Oh, I see.
But IEM is specific for doctors.
So. And it intends to stay that way? Okay. So, the place we'd all like to see integration happen is, of course, right in our hospitals, but the places where people are actually receiving treatment in oncology departments, much as it is beginning to happen in the US. You know, they actually have their integrative oncology departments. Fantastic. What is the best example you've got here of, you know, some sort of integration happening in a hospital setting? And, you know, say I was a patient there, what would I expect?
You mean education or...
No, actual treatment. Treatment. From a patient perspective.
I think that in Rotterdam, at University Hospital, you have a movement that music therapy is being used.
Right.
In operations and... then you have a smaller hospital, Sittard, in the south of Netherlands, where a hematologist is actually a lecturer in transfusion medicine in the high school of Heerland, I think it is. And he uses the music therapy in the treatment of his oncology patients. And he was rather conventional in the beginning of his career, and I noticed that he was so surprised what the effect was of the music in opening people to talk about things, to be more relaxed, to have less stress, and. This music therapy is also being used in Utrecht at the children's department, the neonatal department.
Good for children. Yeah.
So there are a lot of things happening on the field of music therapy.
Interesting. So that's really the first sort of breakthrough, if you like, in terms of bringing in a new, completely different kind of discipline.
Yeah.
Interesting. You wouldn't have guessed that would be first, really, would you?
Yeah. No, and of course the mindfulness is being used much more nowadays.
Yeah, well that's quite popular in Britain too. Yeah, and it's quite accepted too. I think I don't think there's much objection to mindfulness.
Yeah.
But, interesting. Okay, so bit of blue sky thinking. What would you like to be available to people with cancer in a hospital setting? Say. With your work, what would you like to be able to refer people to?
What I miss is an integrated program of possibilities of support.
Right.
Okay. The information you get as a patient is that you can do the chemotherapy, the operation, the radiotherapy, and that there is a way of, we call that shared decision making, that is important to inform your patient as well as possible, and then a choice can be made in the treatment strategy. But what you're not being offered is a total program of this you can do with your food, with your nutrition. This is possible as stress reduction. So in my ideal world, in my work in a hospital, I would like to be able to offer a total packet to the patient of possibilities, and also the support of oncology's possibilities.
Mm. So this would include the broadest possible range of what might come under the umbrella of lifestyle medicine. So this is looking at their physical fitness, their diet, their nutritional status, their past illnesses, how they got cancer.
Yeah.
Asking that question. Does anybody ask that question in Dutch hospitals? They don't in England.
No, I don't think so.
No.
But that one of the things which always intrigued me is that I always ask my patients, well, as a in a symbolic way, what is the song you've never seen?
Right.
That's something that intrigues me, that I sometimes find things in that. And of course, that doesn't account for children, I think. But in a way, in my patients, I always see a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And stress influences the immune system.
It can lower the
immune response. So I think stress is an important factor. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So that question never gets asked in the UK, which I think is tragic. It's terrible. I think it's just put down to bad luck or something. And of course, without that, then there's no kind of strategy for putting anything right that was wrong before. You just go back to your life with your fingers crossed, hoping you're not going to get cancer again.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's crazy. Because why did you get it?
Yeah.
And your question, I think that can have a lot to do with it often, is that somebody's in some corner of life where they're stuck.
Yeah.
In so many ways, they're completely not expressing what they really feel about life, how they really think, you know, they would like to live, and, like everything is wrong, basically.
Yeah.
And that's hugely stressful, of course, especially long term.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't believe in guilt. If I look at cancer and the origin, sometimes it's not without your guilt, unless you smoke a lot or drink a lot of alcoholics. But the point is that I think it's also a wake-up call.
Yeah.
What can I do with the gift of life? And how can I change my life that it's of value and inspirates me and gives me energy, because I think inspiration and energy is very important in trying not to get the cancer back.
Absolutely. It's very closely tied up with a will to live, basically, isn't it? When you're excited about life and you're forward-looking, that is the will to live, isn't it? You want to do more stuff, you want to, you have plans, whatever it is, very important.
Yeah.
Without that thread into the future.
And doing things that fits you best.
Interesting. All right, so attitudes towards integration. So in Holland, what's more acceptable and what isn't? I mean, for example, how would people view somebody who's going off to do intravenous high dosage vitamin C? Crazy or...?
Well, actually... mainly they think it's crazy, but vitamin C has an influence on a cell of the immune system, the natural killer cell. And the natural killer cell is very important in the treatment, for instance, of leukemia. So at the University of Maastricht, in the hospital, they are doing research on the effect of intravenous vitamin C on leukemia. So that's a good thing
beginning to become acceptable. Okay, what about homeopathy then?
That's not acceptable at all in the Netherlands.
Right.
Compared to other countries like France or Switzerland, Germany.
Rather like England, though.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it? So quite a variety there, but nonetheless, that progress with the vitamin C, for example, that's important.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of people on my show, and I've had several discussions recently about trials which have just showed that with very intractable cancers, the worst kind of cancers, doubling life expectancy with one vitamin added. That's all, just adding in a vitamin. So these things are hugely important to people with cancer, actually. We need to know this kind of thing, what works with what and why it does. So, in the UK, the oncologists, I would suggest, are the most conservative of all the conservative medical doctors. They're right out there. While, in contrast, the GPs are increasingly seen as the most open-minded. They're the people who are pushing things forward towards learning about lifestyle medicine and taking different approaches to helping people with chronic disease, with everyday problems. It's great. I love that. But can you describe the situation here? Do you have the equivalent of a GP in Holland? And And how do the oncologists compare with my description in England?
Yeah. Well, I think the GPs are more progressive. There is a movement of lifestyle medicine in the Netherlands.
There is. So, yeah. And you also have a GP, the equivalent of our GPs.
And if I look at oncology, hematology, mainly people are very conservative, but I noticed during the conference of 2 weeks ago that there were a lot of colleagues who were very much interested in lifestyle intervention in cancer. So I was so surprised that colleagues, hematologists, of which I did not expect it to be that progressive, just wanted to introduce integrative medicine in their hospital. And there are now two hospitals in the Netherlands where integrative medicine actually exists, and there's a possibility of other specialists to refer to the consultant integrative medicine, and it's in The Hague. And in Arnhem, a place nearby. And one of my colleagues, Martin Schiperes, is a hematologist, and he was the one just organized it and made the way open for the introduction of integrative medicine in his hospital in The Hague.
Very interesting. So, I get the feeling that a lot of oncologists would probably like this, but they don't feel there's any way they can. You know, they'd be so frowned upon that they just, you know, they'd be out the door, you know, or laughed at, you know, one or the other. So they, in a way, it's like permission needs to be given for this to be talked about.
Yeah.
And then change can happen. But it sounds like that's beginning to happen from what you're
saying.
I think
it begins to happen. I think that's because it is being looked up as lifestyle intervention. And because of the publications on certain measures. And that makes it more accepted.
Right.
And the only problem is that oncologists or hematologists, people dealing with patients with cancer, are not trained in lifestyle intervention. They have they are studying medicine, and they know how to use chemotherapy, they know how to use the targeted therapy, and all the publications of the effect of the microbiome on cancer treatment, they are not introduced yet in the standard care of patients. No, so there's
it's
a lot.
It's relatively new, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's a game changer in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah.
That one, because actually, the microbiome is not a drug.
It's not a drug.
But you need a good one, because it can make a huge difference, cut it to the effect of standard treatment.
Yeah.
And of course, standard treatments affect the microbiome big time as well. So it's a really interesting and important area, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it could be a game changer in terms of how cancer treatment is seen.
Yeah. Because you now have the treatment with the checkpoint inhibitors.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't work anymore. And there was weeks ago, there was a publication in Science that the composition of the microbiome was important for making the checkpoint inhibitors doing their work again. So it's very interesting how
that is interesting, because that's of course is a problem with just about every standard therapy, is that you get treatment resistance.
Yeah.
So you can only do it for so long, and if it hasn't done the job, too bad.
Yeah.
But yes, lifestyle medicine does have measures to resensitize cancers to the treatment, so it can be used again, which again could be hugely important to people in terms of success or otherwise.
And it's also the case with vitamin C. There was a publication that resistance, they called it the Warburg effect, the cancer cell uses glucose and anaerobic glycolysis instead of the use of oxygen, and that that could, the resistance caused by that other mechanism of the cancer cell could be reduced by adding vitamin C. So there was also a publication. So it's very interesting that not only the microbiome, but also the vitamin C does something. Of course, we need to do much more research to understand it better and to discover how we can use it. But there are so many things possible.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that is the view of treatment, the same way of looking at things gets applied to drugs as gets applied to vitamins, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
Because, chemotherapies, they're very dangerous drugs. They need to be tested to death so they really know what they do and what they shouldn't do with them. But vitamin C, well, it's not too dangerous, is it? And okay, vitamin C with a chemotherapy, well, it could have an effect. So they have to know if there are any contraindications in that way. But it's not essentially dangerous.
No.
You can have huge doses of vitamin C; it doesn't do any harm.
Yeah.
So the need for the same kind of exhaustive trials and all that stuff is not really there. That's 10 to 20 years to get a drug ready to market. It's not needed for vitamin C, and they could be finding out about it much quicker if they just did real world trials. They said, right, on our board here, we're going to give vitamin C and see what happens, But I don't think there's much excuse for not doing that kind of thing when you think of the urgency.
I think that of course you have to be careful if you look at radiotherapy.
Yeah.
That you don't influence the effect of the radiotherapy.
No, you don't want to diminish it.
Yeah.
But usually actually it's the other way.
Yeah.
From what I hear, it actually makes it more effective.
Yeah.
So, why aren't they doing it, for heaven's sake? It's not like we're winning the war on cancer. We're not, you know. So if anything could help and is largely, non-dangerous, then for heaven's sake, do it.
Yeah.
Especially if it's cheap as well.
Yeah.
Wanted to bring in one other thing that is a subject I always find interesting, is that one of the problems in medicine, certainly in the UK and I think everywhere, actually, nearly everywhere, is that there is a lack of empathy in healthcare. A lack of care and compassion. So that's, it's well known in Britain, never is documented, that this is what goes on. And a certain proportion of people feel like completely abused by their treatment, basically, by the way they've been handled. There seems to be, and I was talking to the people in Brazil about this, and they confirmed this is completely true, is that when you introduce lifestyle medicine, lifestyle approaches, actually brings this element in.
Yeah.
Without having to change medicine itself, it's still there doing technically all the same things it always did, which of course it's very good at doing many things technically. But on this other side, which is actually caring for people, it's called health care, but it's often not very caring at all. But bringing in this whole other aspect of lifestyle medicine can make that change just by sort of introducing an extra ingredient. And it has this effect in two ways, I think. A, by adding to obviously to what's brought to the patient, but it actually changes the staff as well.
Yeah.
That this element of care is there within their organisation.
I think that empathy and connection when you treat a patient is very important.
Mm.
Because if you feel connection with your doctor, and perhaps I should mention that since here I'm a patient myself, a cancer patient with a good prognosis, but I just found that the connection with my specialist was very important to make me feel safe.
Yeah.
And when I treat patients, connection with my patients makes me feel more inspirated, because I think connection between human beings is so important. And when you treat someone, it has to do with dialogue and look at what someone needs. So I think connection and empathy is very important, and not only for the patient but also for the doctor, because if you add that as a normal part of your treatment, just being human instead of doctor first, but you with the profession of a doctor, then it's much easier, I think, to do the heavy job of treating patients with cancer.
Yeah, that's certainly how it seems to me. I think the doctors seem to suffer enormously from working in a system that basically not be human, really, just be cut off. And it's very destructive on the people who are actually doing it. So it's good to hear you say that. I completely agree. It's much better for both parties. Okay, right. So in the UK, it's the public who are the big supporters of integrative medicine. The public spends a huge amount of money on lifestyle medicine, despite the fact the health service is free. Why do they do that? Well, they want it. They like it. So I'm just interested to know what the public attitude is like here in Holland.
Well, I think the public also uses a lot of sources of integrative medicine. It's not being reimbursed by the insurance companies. Only when you have a sort of a special assurance, then part of the visit to another doctor is being paid. But people are doing that because they don't find the total package within the conventional medicine. So they are using other things, and they are looking for other things. And I think that sometimes the danger is that you can do things which are not as well for you as a patient. So I would like to prefer that the integrative medicine is given to the patients in a package, just next to the conventional therapy, because then you have some control on interactions with medication, so you can prevent the patient from damage, but also for costs. So I think it's important to combine all the measurements in the treatment of patients.
It would be best. I mean, the worst scenario is the kind of one we have, you know, quite commonly in the UK, where the patient does lots of stuff. They don't tell their oncologist because their oncologist would go berserk. And so there's no dialogue at all between these, you know, a lot of things they might be doing elsewhere and all the people they're involved with there and the oncologist. The better one is where you have at least a dialogue going on. And certainly I know the people who are outside of healthcare, many of them try and have a dialogue. They send letters to say exactly what they're doing. They never receive a response, but they do it anyway. So, you know, they're trying to make a dialogue. But ideally, you're right, these people should work together for the benefit of the patient. This is the best, Everybody the same aim. And making sure that everything works together and it's doing the best. Anyway, it's interesting. So what you're saying about the public is that it's very similar to Britain in that.
I think so.
Okay, so I mentioned earlier that the GPs in Britain are kind of what I think of as the most forward-looking doctors in the UK. Well, the doorway that seems to be leading them into this broader way of looking at health is functional medicine. Large numbers of them seem to be training in functional medicine now, and that's definitely having a noticeable effect. That they are excited about medicine again as a result. And, you know, they're out there, a lot of them talking about it very loudly and saying, come on, this is more like it. And I'm just interested to know whether functional medicine is having a similar impression on healthcare in Holland.
It just started. There is a general practitioner, Tamara Meijer, I think she's named, who has done a lot on functional medicine, introducing it to her colleagues, and so it's very popular because they see the results. And one of the there's a professor in endocrinology in the Leiden University, and he does a lot of lifestyle intervention in patients with diabetic.
That's a great place for it all to start. Because it's so obvious that lifestyle fixes it, whereas drugs don't.
And that indeed with the insulin resistance, you can influence that with lifestyle. And so he has very nice results in his patients. So he's also very enthusiastic about it, about that.
Yeah, it's great. We love it. So what would you say are the key drivers for moving things towards integration in this country? What are the things moving it forward? And do you think it's moving ahead kind of pretty well or still very slow?
I think it's moving ahead, much slower than I wish.
Yeah, always. And I think, me too.
I think society, patients, they are the most strongest drive
right.
in changing it.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, perhaps you can compare it with environment. Eh? That there a lot of, as human beings, we just destroyed a lot of things.
Mm.
And that the same care for the environment is the care for your body and that's
yeah.
lifestyle. Yeah.
Very similar, yeah. I was interested to ask where, very close to the German border here. Now, Germany, of course, is well known
yeah.
for integrative cancer clinics.
Yeah.
Loads of them over there. And yeah. if a lot of people in the UK, their first idea is they've got some money and they get cancer, well, let's go to Germany.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
they think. Yeah, they're interested in that style of medicine. So, well, I'm interested in two things. One, is there anything like that in this country at all? And two, do Dutch people go across the border to Germany?
I don't think there's anything like that in Germany or in France. The integrated medicine for cancer patients in a regular setting. I sometimes refer patients for a second opinion to Germany.
You do?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. It's just a sort of quirk of the law over there that it's allowed integrative medicine to flourish in a way that
yeah.
it's quite unparalleled in Europe, really,
yeah.
isn't it? But it's good it's happening somewhere, of yeah. course, and it's very close to your doors, which is nice.
It's
a bit, but for us, it's a bit further. It's quite expensive for English people, but it is
yeah.
it's expensive. So it's not something that everybody can consider doing, but,
yeah.
but certainly the pushing the boundaries all the time over there, which is good that somebody's doing
yeah.
that, and some places achieve some pretty startling results too.
But I think there are some nice movements in the Netherlands. There are the Nijmegen University Hospital and Maastricht University Hospital, and a few larger hospitals dealing a lot with people with cancer, so. The Hague, Maxima Medisch Centrum, and Psychiatric Institute Lentes. They are combined in a consortium,
mm-hmm.
and the idea is that the consortium has to have its influence and in promoting a more integrative care for patients.
Great. So that's a big movement.
Yeah, that's a big movement yeah. at the moment. Yeah.
Right. So that. Has to have some effect quite
yeah.
soon, yeah?
Yeah?
Yeah, good. Nice. Okay, now, you've already talked a lot about the research that kind of underpins a lot
yeah.
of this now. It's not like wacky anymore. You can say, well, look, come on.
Yeah.
They've shown
there's
over there, those
there's
people
paper.
Did this,
yeah,
a
yeah.
paper there. It
yeah.
shows it actually
yeah.
makes a difference. So,
yeah.
come on, listen. So, is there a lot of research in Holland? Or are these papers coming from elsewhere?
No, in Holland you have the Maastricht University Hospital doing the vitamin C and leukemia.
Yes, you already mentioned that. Yeah.
And in Rotterdam, something research is done with music therapy, in stress reduction. Of course, Nijmegen with mindfulness and,
mm-hmm.
and stress reduction and cancer care. And in Rotterdam, there is also a study on the use of curcumin. I thought it was pancreatic cancer. So there are some small movements in the researching things.
Yeah, and what, you know, there seems to be this absolutely stultifying habit that countries have, which is that the fact that they've done a perfectly decent trial in America is not good enough. We have to do our own ones, you know.
Yeah.
Is it like this in Holland as well?
I think so.
Yeah. Isn't that like crazy? I mean, the amount of money and time wasting that goes on.
It's not always the case, but depends on the kind of research. And sometimes it has to do with the difference in treatment. Of course, you have chemotherapy, but sometimes dosages may differ.
Between countries, you mean?
Between countries. Mm. In general, the states are much more aggressive in the treatment of cancer.
Is that still true?
Yeah, I know
they used to be, but that's still true.
So that's why I think that's if you can compare the complete therapeutic regime,
mm-hmm.
then it's not necessary to do the research completely all over again. But because those differences in treatment, people tend to start a study again and to see whether it's really in their case also beneficial or not beneficial. Yeah,
anyway, it just feels like considering what a global problem it is, at least in westernized countries, that a bit of pooling of resources would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
But if you look, for instance, I used to work in the Leiden University Hospital years ago, and there was some excellent research on immunohematology and how to prevent people from bleeding by making a leukocyte-depleted blood product. So it was being published, but then in the States, they did the study all over again. So the States is also looking at European countries we are going to do that. Nice results. They showed, but
I just don't even get it. We have to do much more research. It's like standard line, isn't it? And there's every single little line of pursuit requires so much money, so much effort, so much time, that to be redoing things that are already done and shown to work is just like, seems nuts to me. What to do. All right, well look, we're about out of time, so I just want to say thanks very much indeed for giving us a little window on what's going on here in Holland. Very interesting. I must admit I didn't have much idea. All I was aware of was that I couldn't think of any integrative oncology clinics.
No, they're not.
I thought, well, does that mean nothing's happening or what? So it's good to find out that something is happening and change is afoot. So thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Well, it sounds as though in many ways things are in a similar position in Holland to the UK, although clearly Dr. Novotny has an exemplary attitude to lifestyle medicine and integration. I hope to have another interview from Holland for you next week, so do make a point of joining me again if you can. Goodbye. Thank you.